Hey, this is Allison from nerdvampire.wordpress.com, and you are listening to Some Cast It Hot, episode 12. So let's begin with the movies we watched recently. And I actually just got back from seeing Water for Elephants.
Oh.
Yeah.
How was our past?
He wasn't bad.
Really?
Yeah.
He's trying to be a real actor.
I know, it's kind of impressive.
And he hates Twilight, so I kind of respect him for that at least.
Yeah. It looks really pretty. It's a very pretty movie.
Who directed it?
I have the IMDb page hang up. Francis Lawrence. Yeah, and it's got Robert Pattinson, Reese Witherspoon, and Christoph Waltz, who is really who I wanted to see for this.
Sorry, Allison, besides the fact that Edward's in the movie, I don't know anything about it.
Okay.
Can you let me know?
Okay, Jacob, who's played by Robert Pattinson, is a veterinary student at Cornell.
Is it sad that I know that you're wrong already?
Am I?
Yeah, it's Edward.
Oh, Edward.
Oh my god. Continue.
Okay. Edward is a veterinary student at Cornell. But his parents die, and he could continue and finish his degree, but he decides to follow the train tracks until he comes to a circus car, and he just jumps on it. And they're going to throw him off, but then he's like, wait, I'm a veterinary student, and your horse is going to lose its leg pretty soon and won't be able to perform. And so the owner, August, played by Christoph Waltz, he's just sort of like a mean bastard the entire time. And he's married to Reese Witherspoon's character, who is like the main attraction. And so there are shenanigans. And it's kind of got bad pacing for these shenanigans, actually. And they get an elephant. So that's the big thing, is that Jacob has to become, like, the elephant's trainer, and the elephant, like, won't listen to anyone, and there's animal abuse in it, which kind of sucks. But,
wait, like, real animal abuse?
Well, no, fake animal abuse.
Oh, okay.
But,
I mean, it still sucks, but...
Well, yeah. It's during the Depression, so it would be...
So no one was happy?
No one was happy. People keep getting thrown off the train at weird intervals. It's cool. Anyway... But the elephant is nice. I like the elephant the best, actually. It was really smart. It understood Polish. That's how they get it to do things. And I saw it with a friend, and she was like, wow, Robert Pattinson, he actually looks good when you cut his hair. So.
And when he's not, like, super, super pale. Like, he has really bad skin.
He is really tan in this movie.
Weird.
And I'm not sure if it's just because I'm so used to seeing him paler than death, but he's really tan.
Yeah, it might just be the contrast.
Yeah.
Like, I saw the trailer. I remember thinking he looked a lot better than usual. Like, he looked normal.
He looked healthy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't look like he was on his deathbed.
Right. And he doesn't...
And, like, seeing him in sunlight is weird.
And the thing is, he gives an okay performance. It's nothing really to write home about. Like, there aren't really any great performances in this, except for maybe Christoph Waltz is pretty good. I kind of feel like he's calling it in a bit at some points, but there's an interesting dynamic between him and his wife, at least. It's not just, like, he's the abusive husband who's in control of her. He, like, falls apart whenever... she's upset at him. So that is interesting to see.
I Have you read the book this is based on?
I read like the first 30 pages.
Did you not like it?
The writing style kind of rubs me the wrong way, and I'm wondering if maybe it's because it was written for NaNoWriMo.
Yeah, that's the only thing I know about it, which I find impressive that it made achieved such success and made into a movie, and it's like a book written in a month. I think that's kind of cool. That's amazing. Yeah. And I think the person was I forget the woman's name, but she was fairly young.
Sarah Gruen, I believe. So I think this was her second book, though.
Oh,
Like,
I
she might
see.
have just participated in NaNoWriMo one year and this got produced, but and she happened to find it, like, she liked it enough that she wanted to publish it. I mean, I don't really have anything else to say. It was a pretty nice, maybe not worth like the entire 2 hours they spend on it, but it is really pretty. And you see a lot of circus things, which are fun.
But probably still something I won't spend money on. Yeah.
Not really worth the ticket.
Right. Well, I've been watching too many movies lately because I was studying for the GREs, but those are done now. And I went to a few IFF Boston movies, which was cool. But the most recent movie I actually saw yesterday, I saw Rubber, which I know Sasha knows all about. I mentioned it on Twitter, and I got like 10 replies, like Rubber, rah! Just like screaming at me about how great Rubber was. Okay, man, awesome. I've been wanting to see it since like you and a few other bloggers saw it at TIFF, and I've been really, yeah, I've just been really excited for it. I thought it looked really cool. It's got a great poster. I got a free poster of it like a month ago because the theater where it was playing was like, oh look, we will have Rubber soon. So I've been like expecting it to come every single Friday. I think it's gonna be the Rubber day. And then finally this weekend, the weekend of IFF Boston and my GREs, it opens. I know. I was like, really? But it's cool. I got to see it yesterday afternoon for a cheaper price and everything. But yeah, it's for those who don't know, it's a really awesome movie that has a strange premise. It is about a tire named Robert. Although you don't learn his name until the credits. But we'll call him Robert just for, it makes it easier. And he just kind of wakes up one day, rolls out of the dirt. It takes place in like a desert. I assume it's in America somewhere. I don't actually know where this movie takes place. Yeah, it seemed American. And I don't know where else there would be a desert that like spoke English. And yeah, he just sort of like rolls away and starts a path of destruction. And he just finds that he really likes destroying things. And when he can't destroy something, like by rolling over it, it makes him really mad. And he gets so mad that he has psychokinetic powers. So anything that's in his way that he can't destroy by rolling over, he makes explode. And he works his way up from a beer bottle to a human head. Many human heads, to be specific. Many, many, many human heads. And so that's all I knew about the movie. I knew that was what the movie was about. And I'd seen the trailer and I thought it looked really funny and weird and totally like my kind of movie, been recommended to me by a few people. But what I was actually surprised and impressed and actually really taken by was the whole like meta film thing. I don't remember seeing in the trailer, and like I guess I hadn't read enough in-depth reviews of it to know that that was a thing. But yeah, like I liked how they just have a it's the entire movie, the point of it is to be inexplicable, and they tell you that at the beginning of the movie, like this movie won't make any sense. Everything happens for no reason.
The
And
first
that's
5 minutes are just so fantastic. I wanted to watch those like 10 minutes over and over and over again.
I know, just I love when the car just comes and like knocks over all the chairs, and yeah, you're just like, what? What? But you just kind of let it happen, and it's great. But yeah, I love it. Yeah, it's like the group of people standing in the desert, watching the movie happen, and commenting on the movie, but then being affected by what's happening in the movie. So it's this interplay between the two things, between the spectator and the actors. And some of the actors know they're actors while others think they're in real life, but they're not in real life. And just like this whole, I was like, because at first I thought, I like the movie a lot. I do think that it lost a little bit of steam with its whole tire just destroying things thing. It's funny and it's cute and everything, but I feel like some of the people in the audience I was with, which was pretty much only like old white dudes, which seems to be every movie I see. That's the who lives here. And I thought it like 1 in the afternoon.
But you know, they like the guy behind me was cracking up in equal measure every time Robert blew something up with his mind. And yeah, like it's funny, but it's not like it was a surprise anymore. Like when he's exploding the like, you know, fifth person's head, I'm not uproarious with laughter.
Yeah.
And it's that's okay, but I felt like I was like, wow, these people are kind of like getting more of a kick out of it, whereas I think it's still a cool concept and a fun movie, but I just thought it like lost a little bit of steam. But I really liked the whole meta film thing. I loved the cop. I don't remember his name.
I don't remember either.
Yeah, the main cop guy who just keeps talking to the audience, talking to the spectators, trying to control what's happening. He's the only one who seems to know what's going on, kind of. And, like, I really liked him, and as he became more involved as the movie progressed, I thought that kind of made up for the actual Robert story sort of losing steam. But still very good.
I saw it at Toronto After Dark, and...
Oh, that's a tip, sorry.
Yeah, don't worry about it. No, like, I notoriously did not want to see the movie. I had seen almost all the movies at Toronto After Dark, and I just said, I can't watch this, like, tire killer movie. Stupid. Like, I don't want to watch it at all. And then I was pretty much, like, manhandled to come to the theater. And I sat down, and I was miserable. And then, like, I fell in love, and I'm pretty sure it was my favorite movie of last year. Just, like, I loved it so much. And I understand, like, it does lose its steam kind of at the end, but then there's that line about reincarnation, and I just, like, I like, doubled over in laughter.
It's got an awesome ending.
Yeah.
Definitely, yes. And I like the wheelchair guy.
Oh, yeah. But, like, those first 10 minutes, I would like to frame them and put them on my wall.
No, but the one thing about that speech, though, because the speech in the beginning is repeated during the credits, yeah. But, like, shown from a different point of view, and he has that shtick about, like, why does the guy in the piano, in Roman Polanski's The Pianist, have to hide when he's so good at playing piano? And I wanted to be like, because he's Jewish, you guys, come on. Like, I was like, dude, that doesn't at all fit into what you're talking about. And I know that made it funny, but I couldn't help but be like, oh. Like, want to, like, yell to him and explain to him about how the Nazis worked. Maybe he was unaware. But it's, yeah. Still, very good, and yeah, it really surprised me with how it just treated itself, and I thought that it was just a really fun take on a meta film, because, yeah, good times. Good soundtrack, too, and good effects. Like, it didn't look like it took cost a lot of money to make, but it looked really good.
So, the last movie I watched was... There's a documentary film festival in town right now, so I went to a midnight screening of Conan O'Brien Can't Stop. So what it is, it's a documentary that followed Conan for his comedy slash music tour that he had in between his firing from The Tonight Show to Conan. So the tour was called The Legally Prohibited from Being Funny on Television Tour. One of his friends from college actually directed the movie. His name was Rodman Flender. And
that sounds like a made-up name.
I know, it does, right? He looks like he would... He's kind of nerdy looking. He looks like he would be friends with Conan. But yeah, it just follows the 6 months that he was unemployed from television and was doing this tour. He was, like, contractually, like, unable to appear on television, appear in interviews, anything like that. So it was really great to actually see how he was feeling in those moments. Like, this is the only actual documentation of him during those 6 months. And, like, there's no boundaries at all. Like, because it's his friend directing it, they're very frank about everything, and they can go anywhere they want. And there's lots of, like, famous people in the movie. There's Jim Carrey, Jack White, Stephen Colbert, and Jon Stewart, A lot of people from 30 Rock and The Office are in it too. But yeah, it's really good. It's very, very, very funny. I didn't think Conan would be as charming and funny without all of his writers there. But he's surprisingly funny, and I don't actually watch Conan, like his new show. So I think I might actually watch it.
The movie's done its job then.
Yeah, I guess so, right?
That's actually the closing film for IFF Boston tomorrow.
Oh, you should go see it then.
I don't think I'll be able to, but my boyfriend
Oh,
will.
you should see it. I like had 3 hours of sleep that night, and I had to go see it the next. It's worth that.
I figure it'll come out on DVD.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
Because, yeah, it sounds interesting. I'd like to see it, but I'm kind of resentful that I didn't get a press pass this year. So I only saw four movies, and that's all the money I'm going to give. I know that sounds really mean, but I got one last year, and I'm a little frustrated because I know other bloggers got one, so I want to know, like, what's wrong with mine? Do I
That's
cuss
good
too
that they would
much?
renew it. Because usually,
Yeah.
alumni would just get, like, seniority, grandfather.
That's kind of, I mean, I had to, like, reapply, and they said, oh, if you had one last year, doesn't mean you'll get it again this year. But I kind of was like, oh, they have to say that. I'm
Yeah.
totally in. They love me. I was a little overconfident. It's okay. I mean, it's cool. I had other stuff going on anyway, but it's just like, I don't want to have to just keep spending money on all the movies I wanted to see. So
Yeah.
I was like, I'll pick four, and that's all I'll see.
Do you want to go
Movies.
over those four? Yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah, just briefly. Let's see. On I saw four. Sorry, I saw three on Friday. It was a busy day. I saw The Trip. Which also, I don't remember. Did you see that?
Is that the one where they do the Michael Caine impression?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Very funny. Yeah, it's edited from a BBC sitcom of last year, and it's basically a road trip with Rob Brydon and Steve Coogan, kind of reprising their fictionalized versions of themselves roles from Tristram Shandy. And it's directed by Michael Winterbottom, the same guy who directed Tristram Shandy. And it's just them hanging out, being dicks to one another, doing hilarious impersonations, eating really fancy food. And it's very fun. It's probably, yeah, my would definitely one of my favorites of the ones I saw. And then I saw Submarine, which I think Sasha,
Oh,
you mentioned.
how did you like that?
I actually thought it was just okay. But I
Really?
think, I know. Part of it, a lot of it actually had to do with my audience, to be honest. I walked in and it was just full, like replete with douchey looking hipster college kids. And I just looked around me and I was like, oh, this is what this movie is aimed at, probably. I hate everyone in this room, and I would overhear the conversations and I wanted to punch them all. And they all thought it was the best movie ever. And like, I thought it was a cute movie, and I'm totally not against it. But the fact that they were enjoying it so much more and that I hated them made me resent it. Which I know is so mean.
I saw it the opening night when it was at TIFF, and I think one of the reasons I liked it so much is because the director was actually there. So
Oh,
you
I
get,
love him. That's why I saw it.
yeah, so you get all excited and pumped up, and I really liked the main character, but I didn't like anything else.
I actually hated the main character. I thought
Really?
he was a dick. But I
I
loved
just,
the
oh,
parents.
he was a complete asshole,
He
but he had
was.
like really great lines.
He was funny.
Yeah.
I mean, the movie is compared to Rushmore a lot.
Yeah.
And I definitely think that's an apt comparison. And Rushmore is probably, excluding Fantastic Mr. Fox, which I don't really consider like one of Wes Anderson's like main films, it's my least favorite Wes Anderson film, primarily because I find Max Fisher too unlikable, to be honest. It's not that I hate Rushmore, I just can't really get behind it. And this, it was similar here, where yeah, he's funny, but I don't really care what happens to him because he's basically just a dick, you know?
Yeah.
But I love the parents because I just thought their characters were more interesting. And between Sally Hawkins and what's his name? I think Noah Tyler is the dad's name,
Yeah.
the actor's name. And obviously, Patty Considine as the psychic guy. I thought that was great, and I like that story. But yeah, so yeah, not a bad movie, but just I think I didn't like it as much as many other people did. But that's okay. I like Richard Ayoade, and I was interested to see what kind of movie he would make because I believe it was his first film. Then I saw Cataclysm. Bah. Cataclysm. They had a contest to see who could say that really fast, and the girl lost immediately. Great movie. That was like a midnight movie. That is very funny, very, very weird road trip movie, except that it's in a canoe. about this goofy priest who's like a big kid, and he loves metal music, and he's kind of lost his way, so they kind of force him to go on sabbatical. Because all he wants to do is like tell funny stories and watch YouTube videos. Like, he doesn't really talk about he doesn't like talk about Jesus. And so his parishioners are like, what does any of this have to do with Jesus? He's like, oh, it doesn't. So he goes on this canoe trip with this guy. He used to date his sister in high school, and he worshipped this guy, idolized him. He was in a metal band, he was totally cool. And now it's, you know, 15 years later, the guy barely remembers him because he was just his, you know, his girlfriend's younger brother. He didn't even date the girl that long.
Yeah.
He's not a musician anymore. He's like a roadie for the Ice Capades or something. You know, he's like totally washed up, but he has this weird, like, super fan who still idolizes him. And they just go on this canoe trip and they talk, and the priest sort of becomes a little bit, you know, he drinks a bit and he's kind of falling out of his priestly ways. And then in like the last 20 minutes, it just goes off the deep end and becomes one of the weirdest movies. Like, I can't spoil what happens, but if you get a chance to see this movie, it's very funny on its own. Like, it's a really funny, interesting movie, but the end of it, there's no way to prepare you for it, and there's no way I want to even hint at what happens, because it's so awesome and weird. And it's exciting. And the last one I saw was 13 Assassins.
Oh,
yeah. Have you guys seen that?
No.
No,
it just came out in theaters here.
That's the Miike, right?
Yeah, Takashi Miike's new film. It's actually a remake of a film from the 60s. And I like Miike. I'm sort of torn on Miike. I haven't seen all of his movies, obviously, because he's made like 700. But my thing is, a lot of his movies they're very, very indulgently violent, and I'm pretty squeamish. So after I saw the first half of Ichi the Killer, I've stayed away from those kinds of movies that he's made. I'm not going to watch Audition. Yeah. I saw some of Dead or Alive, but it just, yeah. But I've seen, like, The Happiness of the Katakuris and Sukiyaki Western Django, which I talked about on the show, and Zebra Man. Like, he has this, like, half-and-half movie style, where half his movies are, like, pretty much okay, and the other half are just, like, so gory I can't even think about them. But they're all really weird. But this one was totally straightforward and not weird at all. Like, you'd never know it was a Miike film.
Hmm.
It was kind of interesting. It's basically just, it's like a, you know, very traditional story. It takes place in the Edo period, Japan. I think it's towards the end of the Edo period, so it's in the 1800s. And there's a super sadistic lord who's, like, really powerful. He's, like, the brother to the shogun. And he's just, like, killing people all the time and raping and pillaging and just being a huge douchebag for, like, no apparent reason, and never having any repercussions because he's so powerful. And so the shogun's, like, head advisor wants him dead, but he can't do it himself because it's the shogun's brother. So he gets a samurai to, like, round up a bunch of other people, 13, to do it for him and assassinate this guy. And so they go on this big mission, and there's, like, you know, hundreds of people they have to fight, and it's really good, but it's a bit slow, as so many of these kinds of movies are. There's a lot of, you know, just, like, men with shaved heads speaking gravely to one another in metaphors. You know what I mean? Right? I mean, I love Japan, and I love Japanese movies. I'm not at all trying to be, you know, condescending. It's just, like, it's a very specific kind of story, and because of the time period, it's, you know, rooted in that tradition. But it's got this, like, the last half hour is just this huge, awesome fight scene that's, like, really bloody and intense and just well filmed and exciting. And, you know, you've kind of gotten to know all the characters by now, so even though they've just sort of been traipsing about and talking for the past, like, hour and a half, there's this huge payoff. So that was really cool. And you leave the theater on a high because you just had this awesome half hour. It's still a good movie no matter what, but I remember thinking, like, wait a second, you know, there's still a few problems in the beginning of the movie, but it's okay. Very good.
Before we talk about The Fall, I don't know if that's a spoiler.
Spoiler alert!
Now that we're talking about Japanese movies, I just got Memories of Natsuko, which is by the same person that did Kamikaze Girls.
Oh!
I knew it sounded familiar.
Yeah, I have the DVD on my desk, and I'm going to watch it.
It's so exciting.
Yeah, I know.
That's so hard.
I don't know.
Okay.
So,
right, yeah, but sorry, I'm done with my IFF Boston talk. Sorry, I tried to cut it
okay.
short.
All right, do we want to jump into the fall, or Sasha, do you want to talk about hot dogs?
Well, hot dogs it's about halfway done. It goes till next Sunday. So that's been about like 5 or 6 days so far. I've only seen three movies. I saw the Conan doc. I saw this documentary about this skateboarder, which I didn't really like. It was called Dragon Slayer. It was just about like disaffected youth getting high and drinking and skateboarding, and I'm like, ugh.
That's too bad because the title makes it sound badass. That's
I
totally
know.
false advertising.
Yeah, that's pretty much why I saw it. It's just Dragon Slayer. I'm like,
Yeah.
yeah.
What dragons are you slaying?
I don't really know. The
It's a
dragon of
metaphor?
like teenage angst. I have no idea. But the first one I saw was called Boy Cheerleaders, and it is the most adorable movie. It's about this group of boys, ages like 9 to 13 in Leeds, UK, and they organize a boy cheerleading team. And it's hilarious. And there's this one boy who's about 8. His name's Harvey, and he wants to be Billy Elliot. It's like, it's just so sweet. I had a smile on my face the whole time.
That's awesome. Yeah, I heard about that one. Although I have to admit, when I hear "Boy Cheerleader," I only ever think of that SNL sketch with Will Ferrell, which is probably sort of mean to anyone who actually wants to do that in their occupation.
No, but it's really sweet. I think it might have got picked up by HBO. I don't. That might be another one. But yeah, my hot dogs experience hasn't really started yet, even though the festival's almost done.
Well, that's exciting. I hope you see other good ones.
I hope so too. Yeah.
Do you want to talk about the movie we're talking about that I won't spoil because I'm not Sasha? It's super secret.
So our theme for this episode is frame narratives, and our discussion film will be Tarsem's The Fall.
That's so dreamy.
I agree.
We're all thinking the same thing. Allison, do you have a summary or like a
Yeah.
recap?
So Alexandria is a little girl who broke her arm falling from an orange tree, and she's in the same hospital as a stuntman in like early 1920s Los Angeles, and his name is Roy Walker. And he starts telling her a story, and he ends up using the story, and so the film's intercut with the story, but he ends up using the story to have her get him morphine so he can commit suicide.
So sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually a remake, FYI, in
Really?
case you
I didn't
guys.
know that.
Yeah, a lot
I
of
didn't
people
know
don't
that.
know that. I know, it's weird. The film isn't available in the US, which is, it's a Bulgarian film from the 80s. It's called Yo Ho Ho.
Oh, someone had told
Yeah.
me that before and I completely forgot.
Okay, yeah. I mean, it's not like, I think Tarsem pretty much, he definitely did his own thing with it, but the basic premise of like, a paralyzed dude telling a story to a little, I don't remember if it's a boy or a girl in the original, but like to a child to get them to help them commit suicide. Like that, the basic premise is from that film, which I find interesting, and I would love to see the original because I want to know what it's like, especially from 1981 Bulgaria. I've never seen a Bulgarian film, and I wonder what the visuals are like.
Oh, yeah.
Because this film is so visually amazing, and it like relies on its visuals really. So I wonder what it would be like for a movie that I imagine is a little bit on a lesser scale. But yeah, I don't know. It's not on Netflix anyway. I don't think you can get it in America. But if anyone ever finds Yo Ho Ho, let me know because I'd like to see it. Well, with like English subtitles, obviously. But yeah, good summary, Allison. Sorry, I just wanted to pop that in there. Where can we begin?
Yeah,
there's so much. The main thing about this movie, aside from the visuals, which could be totally like hours spent on in themselves, but I always walk away just really charmed by the little girl, Kentinko Utaru is the actress's name.
And the more I learned about her, I found it interesting because she is Romanian, and this was her first movie. She's not an actress. And she kind of thought that what was happening was real. Have you heard the commentary?
Yeah, Lee Pace, he was brought in wheelchairs for most of the time that he spent acting with the little girl, and she really believed that he couldn't use his legs. Didn't Tarzan tell the crew that he was also paralyzed to keep the illusion going?
I know
I
all about
forget
that.
because I've read about this movie in different places, and I haven't watched the whole commentary. I watched some of the commentary, so I forget where that was. But I think he wanted her to believe that it was real, and I think some of the crew people thought he was paralyzed as well. So when he started to film, because Lee Pace plays both Roy as the paralyzed stuntman, but he's also in the story where he's walking around. And I think a crew person saw him walking around as the bandit, and they got freaked out. But yeah, because I think what's really cool is he, because yeah, half the movie is obviously this big fantastical story that Rory's telling about this, ethnically diverse group of people who are traveling the world, and but then the other half takes place in the hospital, and it's pretty much just Alexandria hanging out in the hospital, and it's all filmed in sequence. And when she, so she like has her teeth by the end of the movie because she'd really lost her teeth in real life, and they filmed in sequence, so her teeth grew in. And she didn't know Lee Pace. So in the first scene where they meet, and she's sort of scared and she doesn't want to go near him, and she's standing at the doorway, and he's kind of beckoning her to come in because he wants to talk to her. She was actually kind of scared and actually didn't know him and actually didn't speak English that well. But as this film progresses and as real life progressed, she came to love Lee Pace and hanging out with him, and English got better. I don't know. I found it really interesting, knowing that, because she's so good in it, but that's kind of because she's not acting. It's kind of like a lot of it is sort of her experience in a way. And I usually, I hate kids. I really hate kids. So when I like a kid in a movie, sorry. I mean, not that you have kids. I'm not a fan of kids. If a kid can impress me in a movie, then I think that that shows something. Real talent or just something really interesting, because so often I want to stab every child I see. Well, by the end of the movie, when Lee Pace is let's say asleep, and she's kissing him on the face, you can totally tell that she just loves this man. And I mean, it's been all actors do that. It's clear that this is a real relationship.
And just when she's crying and just sort of mumbling, because a lot of times she can be hard to understand, but it's okay. You don't need these perfectly written out lines because you totally understand what's going on, and it's so affecting. I cry like a baby every time I watch this movie because it's just their relationship is so well displayed. And Rory's is just so attractive. Anyway, but yeah, so I don't know. Every time I watch this movie, I walk away just thinking about how she's awesome, but I don't think she's really acted after this.
No, I don't. Apparently, at the beginning of the movie, she knew almost no English, and by the end, she was almost fluent.
I know, that's awesome.
There's so many tall tales and stories about this movie, that I've gotten secondhand knowledge from, either from friends or I've read rumors online or whatever. Everybody's wants to talk about the behind the scenes of this movie.
I mean, because it's so, the film itself is an epic, but to film it, to make this movie, I can't even imagine what went into it. Didn't they go to 18 or 20
Yeah, they went
countries or
to
something?
20 countries over the period of I don't know, 10 years.
Yeah, Tarzan's been working on this movie forever.
And there's this big thing that apparently there's no CGI in this movie.
Yeah, I
Yeah, I
heard
heard that
that
too.
one.
That
But
makes no sense to me.
no, because there has to be a little bit of CGI, because how does you I was just watching it and I swear I saw some scenes it was well done, but you
The
could
only
tell.
scene that I cannot for the life of me figure out how they could do it without CGI is the map on the man's I was just
Oh,
thinking that.
yeah. How
Yeah.
would they do that?
And unless you did it in some sort of a time-lapse photography way where like he's literally having it painted on him, but I don't think so, because it's like
It's
there's
growing.
ridges on his body, right? It's like
Yeah.
it's 3D. But like there's all this commentary that like there's no CGI in this. It's all like real.
That's so
And
crazy.
it makes no sense to me. And I just watch it with my jaw on the ground the entire time, falling. I know, it's so beautiful.
It's
And it's out
proof.
on Blu-ray, which this is one of the like five movies in the world that I was like, I need this on Blu-ray. I need this in that. Like, I saw it in theaters 3 times because I was so obsessed with it. And I wanted everyone I knew to see it. None of them liked it as much as me, and I was so mad at all of them. But yeah, and so all I want to do is like recreate that experience because it's such a big movie. Like all the shots are just so vast, you know, all the landscapes.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God. I still, after seeing this movie, my like dream for when I die is to be wrapped up in a huge cloth and my blood just comes out and fills up that huge top. You know what I'm talking about? That scene is so
Yeah,
awesome. And to have Lee Pace put his hand on my body and avenge my death.
yeah.
But like that scene, like it's so striking. Like that to me, that's one of like, if not, it might not be my favorite image in the film, because I don't know if I could pick that. But just that huge pillar of cloth in the
Yeah,
middle of
right.
like a desert.
And the blood is just sort of seeping into it
Yeah,
really
and it just slowly
slowly.
rises up. Oh, it's so cool.
There's
Do that for
so
me when I
many
die.
scenes like that, like that entire blue city. Oh
Oh,
yeah,
yeah.
and that like that staircase maze. Oh right,
Oh,
with Darwin and the monkey.
yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and I
There's
love
so many
the
beautiful.
marriage. Oh yeah,
That one's
when
really
they're spinning
good.
around. Oh, but then they have that creepy like human body chandelier.
Oh, I always hated that part.
Yeah, like
Like, I
I think
love
that's
it, but I
cool.
hate it. It's creepy.
It feels out of place because
Well,
it's
isn't
so
that,
gory.
it's when he's getting like irritated with her because he's calling her a liar in the
Yeah,
story.
so
Yeah,
he's
she's
putting like death into the story. So
yeah, he's kind of a jerk.
yeah, but
And when
it's
I,
so heartbreaking when he does that.
I
You know, like he's just like destroyed, and he's oh, I
And he
like
eats himself
I
so
hate
much, he
this
doesn't even
movie.
care.
Right.
Yeah. Like he already has the lowest opinion of himself he can get. So
I
it's like he
started.
feels bad, but that just makes him hate himself even more, so he'll just make it worse, because why not?
Right. I
Again, I
started
think that's just really tragic.
thinking if there was a villain in this movie, it would, like, as much as I wouldn't want to label him the villain, it would have to be Lee Pace's character.
Yeah, because Odious is barely in it. He's there
Right.
for like structure.
And even in the
Yeah.
real world, he's just there for like a second signing autographs.
He's a scapegoat, really. It's just
Yeah.
giving Lee Pace something to be mad at.
And but it's also something for him to like conquer in the story, like as much as he's willing, like I guess in the story's narrative, he's willing to like die and be beat up, but it's Alexandria like calling from the sidelines going like, "You can't let him die. You've let everyone else die. You can't let him die."
Oh,
And
that
then he
sounds so sad.
finally, yeah,
Oh
but then
God, we're all gonna start like bawling at the Well, the girlfriend's kind of a villain too. She's never given a name.
no, she's just really there.
Right?
And then you have the her equivalent, which is Nurse
Nurse Evelyn.
Evelyn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh no, I just mean because the fact that if obviously Roy is venting his frustration before becoming paralyzed after doing this stunt and being kind of screwed over, but also after, I mean, like the woman he loves leaves him or something, right? It's never fully explained.
It
But
seems
I think
like
like that just made it so much worse that that's was sort of the tipping point.
He decided to do that stunt, and everyone told him you shouldn't do the stunt, it would be suicide, but he did it. I assume it's like after she left him, so
Yeah,
he
I
would be
guess
like,
that's
if
what
I
she
died while doing this, what would matter?
meant. Oh, I thought she broke up with him after he did it.
No,
I
I
guess I
think
didn't actually get the timeline.
there had been like a time period, like a significant amount of time.
Because all the people who visit him are telling him, like, suicide's not the answer. So I guess they would have assumed that his stunt had been, like, a suicide attempt.
Suicide, yeah.
Yeah.
True. Good point. Yeah, there's a lot, like, I don't know, I sort of pick up different things when I watch it from the adult conversations, because I really like how well Tarsem shows the entire film from Alexandria's point of view.
Yeah.
So, like, I remember the first time I watched it,
there were certain things I really just didn't understand and didn't pick up on because you're only seeing it from what she sees. So you, there are these half-heard conversations. It's out of context, and she doesn't really get it. So she'll kind of wander away in the middle of something because it doesn't mean anything to her. So I had to watch it multiple times to kind of be like certain little things that I hadn't quite picked up on before, you know, which I think is nice because that gives it sort of different layers of context. And I also, one thing about this movie that really frustrates me is how so many people don't like it, which is stupid.
I don't understand how people don't like this. Like, I sometimes, like, go meet up with people, like, that are really into movies, and they talk about movies all the time, and they're like, oh, what's your favorite movie? And most of the time, I say The Fall. And they just look at me blankly. And I'm just like, it's really good.
I know. What I've heard from people, I don't know if you've heard the same thing, but I think what people don't like about it is the story. They think that it's, and I've read like critics that have said the same thing. It's not just like the lay folk, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, they think the story's dumb and flat and doesn't make any sense. But I mean, how are they not understanding that it's completely seen from this little girl's point of view? So the reason things don't make sense is because it's all in her head and it's all what she understands. And I think that's like brilliant, kind of like the way that the Indian is an Indian from India instead of a Native American, the way that Rory imagines, she imagines him as an Indian, and the way that like certain characters, little things change about them throughout. Like there's a lot of inconsistencies, but that's because not only is Rory changing things, but she's changing things in her imagination as she has new experiences in real life. She adds them to the real story. She forgets things. She remembers things. She adds them for her because that's what your imagination does. And, like, it's only as she perceives them. And I think that he's so smart at showing her point of view. Like, Tarzan did an amazing job. And I hate that. It's like, are people not picking up on that? To me, it's really obvious. I don't know.
I don't. We cannot give that point of view, Alex. We cannot.
No. We can't sink to their level of not liking this movie.
No.
Because it's by the end, yeah, it's so, you're so emotionally affected by everything, like, I can't understand not feeling that way about these characters.
And I really like the fact that she takes, like, tiny things from her reality and she informs it to the story.
Oh, yeah.
There's all the duplication of characters, like, the orderly at the hospital is Darwin, and the ice guy is the slave, like, stuff like that. And adding the, like, googly-googly... Be gone, and just like, oh, and I really like the teeth part. Oh yeah, and they that's like the mystic's power.
It's in his teeth.
Yeah, it's just, it's so sweet, and it's, if it feels like an actual story that somebody would, like, how a child would take in that story and think of it in their head. And it's just gorgeous and beautiful, and it's just heartbreaking.
Everything about this movie is good.
Yeah.
I think we can say without fail. Allison, I feel like you've been quiet. What do you think? Do you have a favorite part?
I have many favorite parts. It's like, it's really just the visuals, I guess, are what stick the most with me, and then I go back and I rewatch it, and I'm like, oh, yeah, there's this actual scene. So, oh, it's going to be hard to, like, parse through them all.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to put you on
the spot. No, it's okay. In terms of, like, of the gang members, I don't really want to call them gang members, of the group who, like, helps the bandit, I love Darwin, and I love how he, like, it's played by this actor named Ted Leo, and I've only seen him in one other film, but he's really good.
Wait, his name is Ted Leo?
Yeah. Well, I think so.
Like the singer?
No, I'm sorry. I must be wrong. Hang on.
No, it's okay. I was just, that would be weird.
I think Leo is something, it's either Ted Leo or Leo Bill, but I know he was in Me and Orson Welles.
Oh, yeah, which I haven't seen.
Yeah. But he plays Darwin, like, it's not Charles Darwin, just like the Indian isn't, like, the Indian that Lee paces.
But I love how the monkey is Wallace, just like, Darwin's, the real Darwin's,
yeah.
Like, what would you call him?
competitor, I guess. Wallace, and how it's like, oh, they're all your ideas. Like the monkey has all the ideas because he's Wallace. I don't know. I thought that kind of thing was cute.
And the monkey has the best facial expressions. Oh, it
when
is.
I read
It's
that
Neo
apparently this.
Bill.
Oh wait, what I was about to say would be a spoiler. Never mind. Sorry.
Okay. Sorry.
Sorry.
So I was wrong.
I
It
was
is.
about to talk about something that happens in the scene with the stairs. Let me put it that way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, never mind.
And that's part of why it's great, and just the fact that he's looking for one particular butterfly.
Americana exotica.
Yeah.
Yeah, and his, I love his, yeah, his little drawings, and yeah, it's sweet. And it's funny because you feel like, because they all have, all the people in this group that Rory is making up all have their own reason for hating Governor Odious. And I don't know, I find Dormant is almost funny because the others have more sort of life or death situations. You know, kind of more grave sounding reasons for hating Governor Odious, like how the Indian lost his wife and the Italian guy was shunned and no one was allowed to talk to him, etc. And then Darwin is like, he's really mad at Governor Odious because he killed a butterfly. I mean, I think that's kind of awesome. It's sweet, you know. But it's kind of funny to see him paired next to these other people who've all had, like, sort of, like, really serious and, like, loss of life, you know.
Yeah, I like when they introduce each of the people that are helping the bandit. And you can hear Alexandria, like, comment, like, I really like him, and and she, yeah, she adds to it, like, oh, what is Darwin looking for? And she says the word for butterfly in Romanian, yeah. And it's like, oh, butterfly, you know. And how she gives, I love when you meet Nurse Evelyn, and she's talking to the bandit, Lee Pace's character, and she's kind of, like, becoming Alexandria, because like, while he's telling the story to Alexandria, she has to go to the bathroom. So in the
Oh,
story,
yeah.
Evelyn is, like, jumping about. And she talks about how she likes throwing oranges at the priest, which Alexandria does in real life. You know, it's, like, I think that seems really cute because that was one of the most, like, that was one of the ones that broke, not the fourth wall, but, you know, broke the ties,
yeah.
Or broke the division more than I think other scenes were.
Well,
but.
That's around when she suddenly... She starts putting her own stuff into the story. Like, she introduces herself as the daughter of the bandit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because that happens a little bit after. Because
yeah.
I have a scene. So I think that's around where, like, she starts taking over parts of the story. And that's when she's so, like, upset that Roy does what he does around the wedding scene. Because she really feels that it's her story as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's also part of, like, you can just see her becoming so attached to him and so comfortable around him that she wants to take part in what he's doing,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to just sit there and be told a story by a stranger.
Right.
But yeah, no, you're right. It is an interesting turn there when she sort of adds herself in, and it's, like, ridiculously cute and funny, but then also so tragic at the same time. You're, like, torn, you know, when she's trying to wake him up, and it's so cute, but it's so sad. Like, I don't know how to feel, you know? It tugs at your heartstrings. Also, I just want to say, before I forget, that among all the amazing visuals in this film, which we've definitely touched upon, I love so hard that there is that gorgeous stop motion scene.
Yeah.
Towards the end.
It's
short, but I just, it's so good. And
it's
like
scary.
The sound effects, it's so scary. Yeah. and the way the sounds, you can hear her, because, you know, she's hurt or whatever and she's getting surgery, and you can hear in the background, you can kind of hear her, and you hear these hushed voices. Like, I think you're sort of hearing it from her point of view, so it's like everything's disconnected.
Right.
And there's just really great sound effects, and it's so beautiful. I love that scene, and it's so short, but I was so happy when I saw it because I love stop motion animation. But
the other scene we didn't mention is the opening credits.
Oh,
oh my God.
Yeah. That's the scene. I was trying to think of, like, what my favorite scenes were, and I love the opening credits. It's the best use of Beethoven I've ever seen in film to begin with, and it's
And
black
that's
and
used in slow
white
motion.
and slow
It
motion,
is
and it's so
gorgeous. And like
great.
that song is all I ever want to hear when I stop after this movie. Like I put that song on repeat for days every time I watch this movie. And I love that song because it only makes me think of the fall. Even though you hear that song in movies all the time.
Oh,
And then
yeah.
the song but all I think about is that scene. It's so good. Yeah. And the horse being lifted out of the river. Like
Yeah.
it's this weirdly haunting image.
And you end up seeing like all these other characters who appear eventually.
Yeah, it's so cool to see it once you've already seen the film and you watch it a second time and you're like, oh, I recognize these people now. Yeah, it's like, whereas in the beginning, you didn't understand it's like, I think the opening credits is so smart because you don't understand its connection to the film until much later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't know how it relates.
Oh, I'm sorry. Which movie was, what other movie used this that you mentioned?
The saddest music in the world.
Oh, they did?
I forget when, but I remember them doing it and thinking, oh, I still like it better when Paul did it. I forget
No,
what the scene was. I'm sorry.
it's all right. It's just that I talked over you and I'm like, oh yeah, the King's Speech did it too.
Oh, The King's Speech did too. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've seen it in trailers. I mean, it's a pretty popular song,
But
I think.
it's infinitely, this is the best use of it.
I know. Like, I feel like no one should be allowed to use it anymore because what's the point? No, it's like how I kind of hate when people I don't know if you guys are as obsessed with Brazil as I am. I'm gonna guess you aren't. But the song for Brazil, you guys have seen the film, right?
Yeah.
No, Sasha. Oh my God. Okay.
I saw half of it and like I'm not liking this, and I turned it off because I'm like, if I continue and I say I don't like it, Alex will murder me. I'm gonna turn this off and I'm gonna watch it later.
I'm glad that I put that fear in you.
Yeah.
Well, no, I won't be offended. But my point is, the score to Brazil I love, but it's mostly just takes on the song, which I can't actually pronounce. I think it's called Aquilera de Brasil. It means the colors of Brazil, and it's like a folk song. You know, I learned to play it on my saxophone when I was in high school, actually. It's a great song, and it's used in a lot of things. And I'll see it in commercials and in trailers and in other movies. And to me, it's like, why are we using the song? Brazil already did it the best it's ever going to be used. I only identify the movie Brazil with this song. So when I see it in other things, I just my mind flips to a better movie. You know, so I feel like it should be the same thing with the Beethoven thing. Like, I mean, obviously The Fall isn't like a super famous movie, but it should be. So everyone who hears the song should only identify it with The Fall, you know. That was long-winded, I'm sorry. I can't believe you didn't finish Brazil.
And it's like paused at the halfway mark.
It's a long, movie, and it's not for everyone, but it's so good. Do you like Gillian? This movie.
Let's just continue on our conversation.
Okay, no, it's fine. If you don't like Gillian, that's what I'm saying. If you don't like him, then of course you wouldn't like Brazil. No problem.
I don't know. I'm like somewhat indifferent. Yeah, but
It's okay.
I promise you, I will actually watch the entirety of the movie, and I will get back to you.
Right, we'll do, you know what? I will host a Terry Gilliam themed episode, and it's all we'll talk about. Goody. Anyway, sorry, but yeah, music is great. Everything about the fall is great.
Yeah,
Lee Pace is the most attractive man on the earth. He
What
really is.
yeah,
He
agreed.
really is.
And
It's like alarming.
his costume in this movie is like all arms.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I know. It's really, yeah. He's got like a mohawk, but it's like eyeliner, but it's so, everything is okay. It doesn't matter. And he's like southern, kind of. He's a little southern.
We should preface this like love-in by saying that we were gonna have this as the Lee Pace is dreamy episode, but we thought that would be a little crazy.
Well, also, unfortunately, the man, I think he's very talented, aside from being extremely attractive. I do think he's a great actor, but he's in a lot of really bad movies, so we have a
Yeah.
really limited
I just
selection.
watched Pushing Daisies.
I know, and I'm Pushing Daisies, and I would also put forth Wonderfalls
Yeah.
myself,
Oh, yeah.
because that's, you know, I mean, Brian Fuller or anything. But yeah, it's too bad, because I want him to be more successful than he is, but I want him to be in better movies than he's in, and he's doing neither of these things, and it's really frustrating because I've watched Pushing Daisies way too many times, and there's only so much you can do.
Yeah.
It was like 20 episodes. Yeah. Although I did watch an awesome, like, straight to DVD, weird horror thriller with Sarah Michelle Gellar that he did a couple years ago.
You
I
talked
was supposed
about
to
that
watch that the
before.
other day, and
Watch it.
I went to the video store, and someone had already taken it out. That's surprising. I was like, "Are you fucking with me?" And that's like explicit now. I'm like, "Are you serious?"
That's funny. I mean, it's okay. You'll live without it for a couple of days, but it's watchable. It's got Lee Pace,
Yeah,
and he. Well, what's cool is that he plays a kind of a psychotic person, and it's awesome to see him in this different kind of role. And if I remember correctly, there's quite a lot of Lee Pace arms, so that's always a plus. And he gets to have sex with someone, which, to be honest, we don't get to see that often when Lee Pace is in something. It's like
Yeah.
you spend all of Pushing Daisies wanting for him to at least make out with someone, and he barely even gets that. But he has like hella sex with Sarah Michelle Gellar. Spoiler alert. Hell, she's really tiny. Yeah, not just sex. Hella sex. But yeah, it's not that bad of a movie. I think it's a remake of like a Korean ghost story.
Also, do you want to do a recommendation?
Yeah, sounds
Okay.
good. So my recommendation is Big Fish, which,
Yay! I'm
yay!
clapping to all of our recommendations.
So I actually got to see a special screening. The author of the novel, Daniel Wallace, is actually a professor at my school. So
So
I
cool.
know. And he actually did like a screening at our local theater, so I got to see, for one thing, I got to see Big Fish on the big screen, which I love. And then he did a really nice Q&A afterwards. It was pretty obvious he's like had these questions before, and he talks like a lot about, and he goes into a nice amount of detail about what it was like, because he has a small cameo in the film, and he's, you know,
He was
he.
the professor.
Yeah, he
Yeah.
was like the economics professor at one
Oh,
point.
I didn't know that.
It was just funny because it's obvious some of his students were in the theater, so when they saw them, they were like, "It's Daniel Wallace!" And they started clapping at that part. But he was just really nice, and when people brought up, like, well, it's changed from the novel, I'm not sure if you guys have ever read the novel or not.
Haven't. Yeah, I did.
Yeah, okay, so,
Sorry.
no, don't
It's
worry
okay.
about
I'm
it, but
just
like,
obsessed.
spoiler, they change some of Edward Bloom's character towards the end.
You mean a movie adaptation of a book didn't say stick exactly to the book word for word?
Yeah.
What?
Well, it's kind of a
What?
major. I mean, I wouldn't. I've always thought the movie was better than the book, to be honest, and I feel a little
Wow.
awkward saying that, but like, it's. Partly, I saw the movie first. It's so visually beautiful. It's Tim Burton. I love Tim Burton. It's like a Southern romance that I actually like. I'm sorry, I don't like The Notebook, and every time I see
Oh,
movies
Jesus.
that take place in the South, I'm just like, oh, you're doing it wrong.
I
But
thought you were going to say Gone with the Wind. Don't
but
want that one either. Yeah.
like Big Fish is just so good. And all right, so if you've never seen it, it's about Will Bloom when his father is Edward Bloom, who is a storyteller, and he tells these tall tales about his life. But when Will gets older, he becomes less and less charmed by his father's stories, and he starts thinking, well, my dad's been lying to me my entire life. And he's has to always be the center of attention, so they stop talking to each other for several years, and it's only when his mom calls him up and says they're going to stop chemotherapy that he actually comes back to their town and tries to reconnect with his father. And you end up, the story gets interspersed with Edward's stories that he has either told over the years or is telling again to Will's wife. And they're beautiful and marvelous, and there's like a fantastic cast. Ewan McGregor plays the young Edward Bloom. Alison Lohman plays his wife Sandra Templeton. For older Edward Bloom, you've got
Albert Finney.
Albert Finney, thank you. Sorry, my mind blanked right then.
It's okay.
And then Jessica Lange plays his wife,
Marion
Billy.
Cotillard is Billy Crudup's wife, right?
Right, yeah. And Billy Crudup, who is also who's a graduate from my university, so that was kind of cool, is the only character without a southern accent, or an accent really, of any kind. And he's from the South. Like, this entire movie is populated by British actors with better southern accents.
Remember this being the main time, because I like Ewan McGregor, but I don't think he can really be convincingly non-British slash Irish slash Scottish. But
Yeah.
I think that the southern accent in this movie, I liked. Like, that sounded more convincing to me than, say, The Men Who Stare at Goats, where his accent was all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I feel like he can't do just a straight, non-specific American accent. He needs to, like, be from a specific location.
I think he's successful because there is, like, that added amount of camp. So if it's
Yeah.
a little exaggerated, it fits the part.
I agree, yeah. Because it's
Yeah.
sort of over the top,
Yeah.
that makes it believable weirdly enough. Yeah.
And
No,
he
you're right.
is grinning through this entire movie.
He's so happy.
Well, I'd be happy if I were Edward Bloom too. This guy has led a very interesting life.
Very
He's
true, and he gets to be Ewan McGregor, so good for him.
exactly. But like, he meets a giant. He goes to a place that is possibly the afterlife, but like, it's the most perfect creepy town you've ever seen.
Oh, with the shoes.
Yeah,
I haven't seen
the
this movie in years. Sorry, so I'm kind
shoes.
of piecing it together in my memory.
I mean, I don't know, and it's all tall tales, and I don't know, just something about it. Like, it's familiar enough where when I'm watching it, I'm like, oh yeah, like, I can see where all the influences are coming from. I can see how this is like a story from the South, and I've always loved Southern folk tales. But at the same time, there are all these new additions added to it where I'm like, okay, I can see where Tim Burton's bringing in his own things here. They're not really typical, and they've definitely been updated for the 20th century. And then you're looking at them again through how Will must have seen them first as a child, and then when he grows up, sort of more cynical towards them, so. I
It's really
don't
good. I remember the
sorry, go
last
ahead.
scene.
Oh, the last scene.
Yeah, I just like that's the thing that's always stuck with me about I think it's so well done, and I've seen the movie a few times, and every time I'm equally as affected by just the way it ends. It's just really perfect.
The funny thing is, that's not the last scene. It's
Oh, is
like
it? By last scene, I meant the end of the movie.
right. Well, it's like the
You know what I
third
mean? What's the last
from
scene?
last.
What time's it three?
It's the scene where there's a crowd of people at the river.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember the actual last scene, I'm sorry.
It's they like have to the actual last scene, I think, is like Will's kids playing in a pool or something. But
That's fine.
I
They're
know. It
children.
really should have it would have been a better movie to have just ended with like the scene at the river, 'cause it was so beautiful and it rounded things off so well.
It did, yeah. That's why I guess I forgot the actual last scene, because the earlier one was so much better. Yeah, it
Well,
is.
it's the end of the movie is Will's talking about how his father will live on in his tall tales.
Right.
And then it ends with a scene of the big fish floating, like swimming away. And it's just a parallel to the beginning of the movie
Right. Like, I
where it's explaining
do.
things.
I really like how it does tie up, especially like if it had ended with the crowd at the river scene. I mean, okay, fine. It's been like almost 10 years already. So Edward dies at the end.
Spoiler alert, everybody. They
And
spent for the whole movie and they're dying.
so, but instead of seeing his death scene, you see it's supposedly like what he saw in the old witch's eye, how he was going to die, but Will has to make it up. So it's
Yeah.
everyone he's ever met in his entire life waiting for him at the river, kind of giving him a nice send-off. And I think that's a great scene to end on, but the next scene is the funeral, and that's when Will gets to look around and he sees all these people. It's another parallel because you
Yeah.
get to see what was true, what Edward sort of elaborated on. There really was a giant. He really did go to the circus, but there weren't, say, Siamese twins Although, yeah, so I appreciate both, and I think like putting them together in such a way was really good. I don't know. I just love this movie. I don't think I can articulately talk about it
Yeah,
past this point.
there was a moment in like, I don't know, when did this movie come out? Like 2006 or something?
2003.
2003?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Okay. I just came out of high school. I didn't realize it was that long ago. Well, there was like a couple months in high school. I knew maybe half the movie, the lines. Like, I knew it off by heart. And I could just like talk along, like Rocky Horror Picture Show. I could just talk along with it. And it was just like so pathetic. Because I think it came out around the same time as Return of the King,
Oh, yeah.
and there was like a week where I went to the theater and I saw Big Fish, and the next day I saw Return of the King, and the next day I saw Big Fish. I was a really bad student. I didn't do homework in the movie theater. Yeah, so like there was like a moment of utter geekery over Big Fish.
Awesome.
Yeah, I loved this movie so much.
I
And
remember.
you didn't mention the popcorn scene
Oh,
at the
the
circus
popcorn
where
scene.
time stops.
Oh,
Speaking
yeah.
That's the most beautiful scene.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. I feel like watching we're watching this movie now, so I guess you did your job.
All right, so it's Alex's turn for recommendation, I believe. Yeah.
Okay, so mine is older one and foreign film, and a silent film, many things. So it's The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, which is a German expressionist film from 1920. It is a frame narrative in that the story is told by just sort of like a young guy who's like sitting in a garden talking to an older guy with hilariously wide eyes, like huge, like wide open eyes. He looks terrified the entire time. You don't really know the context. It's just this guy like telling a story to this silent fellow, and then it just sort of, kind of like magically goes into the story, and you see the story unfold, and then at the end it goes back to him telling the story to this man. And what's cool about it is that basically the story he's telling is, and the guy's name is what's his name? Francis. Although I don't know how to. That's not a German name, so I don't really know how it's pronounced.
Franz, maybe, and then they just sort of Romanized it or Americanized it.
Yeah,
Yeah.
because the version I watched, I'm not sure what's normal for it, but I watched the one on Netflix, and it had the title cards in English. There was no German whatsoever, so
Right. Well, that's how
I
I watched it, but mine, they tinted certain scenes, so some were like a yellow tint, and some were more blue.
Oh yeah, mine too.
Yeah.
I think that's
And
just what
then
the director did.
there's that weird electric guitar soundtrack. Did you get that?
Don't remember the soundtrack, I'll be honest with you.
I
I haven't
think
seen it in like a year.
there are a couple different versions floating around, and one has like a really modern soundtrack that goes along with it, and the other one is more like the organ music from Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think mine was like organ orchestral type stuff, so
Yeah.
yeah. That would be
Cool.
bizarre watching a movie with electric guitar.
It's sort of weird, but it matches really well. That's the copy I own and the first one that I watched. But it's like I don't want to say like it's electric guitar, like 80s electric guitar. It's really just sort of stylized, and it ends up kind of I think they use it like a zither at some point because you get that whole
Yeah,
sort of sounds.
I can see that working. I mean, I watched the silent film, the 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea recently with live accompaniment, and the guy had sort of like an electronic keyboard thing going on.
Right.
And I mean, it wasn't like an 80s synth or anything, but it was like, modern sounding in the instrument, but the music totally worked with the film. So maybe it's kind of like that. That's cool. Yeah, that's not the one on Netflix, though. Sorry. But yeah, so Francis is just a regular dude. He's hanging out in this garden talking to this old man, and he tells a story of Dr. Caligari, as in the title, who is this just sort of like scary looking old guy who travels from town to town, and he's like a performer, he's like a stage show, because he has a somnambulist named Cesar, or Cesare, Cesar, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've only like read these things, and
when basically Cesar, he can like tell your future or tell the truth, like when he's in this special kind of trance, and that's kind of what the show's about. And he can like be controlled by Dr. Caligari. And when they arrive in the town, there coincidentally happens to be a bunch of murders. So Francis kind of puts two and two together because his best friend, Alan, is killed. Side note, guy who plays Alan looks exactly like Crispin Glover. It's freaky. Seriously. Like, he's like, I think Crispin Glover traveled back in time to start this movie. It's kind of awesome. And I was really sad when he died. So Alan dies, and then Francis's fiance, who's super boring, Jane, ugh, and she gets like kidnapped by Cesar, and Dr. Caligari's evil, blah blah. So Francis is like obsessed with exposing Caligari because he thinks he's evil and he thinks that he's killing people and he's trying to figure out like what's going on, but he doesn't have any proof. And he has to save his super boring fiance, who like spends the whole time like limp. I'm sorry, I hate, like, every time I watch a movie like this, every woman in it just makes me want to punch something. It's so funny. Like, the same thing, like, yeah. The lady in Nosferatu. I just wanted to,
because they don't have anything to do besides, like, sit there and look pretty. And then
exactly,
wait to be kidnapped.
But then with the overacting, everything's 10 times worse. So.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's okay. The point is, but, so what's cool, what I like about this movie as a frame narrative, is that, like I said, most of it is actually the story that he's telling. And you don't really have any context for it. He's just sort of hanging out. You know, maybe he's friends with this guy. You don't really know why he's telling this guy the story. You don't know what's going on. But there's this really cool twist at the very end where you learn just what he's doing, just what, like, why is he there telling the story? Where is he? What actually happened? Is he a reliable narrator? And there's just, like, this really interesting twist that comes at the very, very end. And I think that that is sort of... the crucial moment of the entire film, because I like this film a lot, but I do think that the story is not, well, no, I think the script is not the best. The story is interesting, but I don't think it's like told in the best way.
Yeah.
Because it does drag a bit, and I haven't seen too many silent films. So it's definitely not like, you know, I'm not an expert, but there is all, you know, the overacting and the poor characterization, you know, can get a little on my nerves. But it's got this really interesting twist, and I think that just sort of makes it a much better movie. And also, it has some of the best visuals I've ever seen in a film in life, ever. I mean, The Fall is up there, but this is close. Because the sets in this movie just make me want to walk into it and, like, live in this movie. They are so beautiful, and I love it. Everything is painted with really awesome patterns, and there's all this like forced perspective and Dutch angles and crazy like weird doors, and like things will have shadows, but it's actually that the shadows are painted, so yeah. All the shadows are distorted and everything is dreamlike, and there's, yeah, like Allison, you mentioned, there's these filters to give you different colors, and all the different colors evoke different moods for the different scenes. It's just, it's so cool. It's like the entire film to me feels like you know, just a moving surrealist painting. What more does anyone want, really? So, I just, yeah, no matter what the story's about, I think that's all you need, is just to, like, look at this movie. And it's short, so, like, why not just look at it for a while?
I don't remember it being short.
Yeah, it's kind of long.
That's the thing. It's not actually that long, like, time-wise, but the story itself drags.
Yeah, maybe because you're actually, like, reading.
Yeah.
Which, and even the, I love how even the title cards are in this awesome, like, green, like, wacky font face, you know, like, totally suits the mood. I don't remember the exact length of it, but I remember thinking, like, oh, that's short, and I feel like a lot of silent films were short anyway, so it didn't really surprise me. But this, because the story does sort of drag, I'm not trying to talk down this movie, I do really like it, but just FYI, like, I don't think it's the greatest script, but I think that looking at it and the awesome twist at the end makes it totally worth it, and it is definitely probably one of the best examples of German expressionist film that anyone needs to see. Like, I would rather watch this than watch Nosferatu, for example. As awesome, I like Nosferatu, I did, but I think this is so much cooler to look at, and I think that visually it inhabits more of the spirit as opposed to Nosferatu, which looks cool and everything, but I didn't find as inspiring.
Yeah. Oh, so I just one more thing and then we'll move on. I actually watched this in a film class, and so we went into like what the script was about or like how sort of the background information for it. So the script is written by these two World War I vets, and they didn't have the frame. That was something that the director added in. So the original story without the frame was supposed to be like this very negative, nihilistic, post-World War I sort of like, you can't trust anyone, we are very paranoid about everything, murder, etc. And then if you add the frame in, it gives it a whole other context. And I was the only one in my class who still liked the frame after learning about that. Because I was like, oh, but the frame makes it kind of freaky and weird. And they're all like, no, the frame lessens its meaning.
That's so interesting. Well, I think that, I mean, the frame, I guess, gives it a different kind of meaning, but it's not like the frame makes it this, like, hunky-dory, super happy tale or
No, it still
something.
makes it like super eerie and crazy and
That's cool. I didn't know that. Wow. And that's, yeah, that's weird that it would have such a negative, your classmates would have such a negative response.
Well, I think it was just college student sort of mentality. Like, if you learn it happened this way and you're not a film student, so you don't realize that you know, the director is traditionally the auteur, then you think, oh, well, the director just messed up this guy's vision, and that's not right.
That's true. But, you know, screw that. The director made a good idea. I haven't had a good idea. That's cool. Well, yeah, good to know.
All
So,
right.
yeah, Cabinet back to Caligari. The original, not any of the many remakes. Anyway, Sasha, go on, because I like your pick too. We all like each other's picks.
I
Is this the first episode that we've seen each other's recommendations?
think it must be.
I think so. Sometimes, like, one of us will have seen some of them, but I
Yeah.
think we've all seen all of them, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Good for us.
We're actually watching movies for once.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So my recommendation, pretty much everybody has seen,
In the
is The
world.
Princess Bride, directed by Rob Reiner, and everyone's pretty much seen it. But let's do a little plot synopsis, I guess.
Like one person in the world listening, I don't
One person
know.
has not seen this movie. So there's a sick boy played by Fred Savage who is in The Wizard, probably one of my favorite movies.
Also, Little Monsters, not one of my favorite movies.
So he's sick, and his grandfather comes over and reads him the story. And it's about this girl named Buttercup who lives in this kingdom called Florin, and she falls in love with the farmhand named Wesley, who does everything she tells him to, and says, as you wish. But he, yeah, she marries this king, prince named Humperdinck, and then she's captured by these three other guys who are pretty much the best secondary characters ever invented. There's the Sicilian boss, Vizzini? Is his name Vizzini? Yeah.
Vizzini.
He's played by Wallace Shawn, who is always fantastic. There's the Spanish fencing guy, Inigo Montoya, played by Mandy Patinkin, who is the best person ever. Who is in Dead Like Me, who is also the person who did Dead Like Me did Pushing Daisies, and Lee Pace is the Pushing Daisies.
And Wonderfalls. It's all Brian Fuller.
Oh, really? I didn't
Yeah,
even
that's
think
why
that.
Brian Fuller loves Lee Pace. And I love
I
Brian
don't
Fuller.
do. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And then there's Andre the Giant plays the giant Fezzik. And Inigo Montoya has to kill this six-figured man because he killed his father. And the outlaws are being chased by Humperdinck the Prince, who is unfortunately named. Yeah, and it's great. There's so many good lines in this movie. I watched it like I watched half of it last night and half of it today, and I had to tweet all the good lines in this movie. There's so many good ones. Probably my favorite is like a tiny little one. is when Vizzini's like, you'll be unemployed in Greenland. I just love that so much.
Unemployed in
Greenland.
I mean, the delivery of that one.
Yeah.
Like Greenland is the worst place in the universe.
And like because of that movie, I kind of think it is. It convinces me that I would never want to be unemployed in Greenland.
But if you want to do a double bill with the fall, you bawl your eyes out during the fall and then actually laugh afterwards with Princess Bride.
Have your spirits lifted. And see another pretty good looking dude. I dig Carrie Elwes in a pretty big way. I don't like the mustache, that was my main issue.
No.
Yeah.
But I think he's really attractive otherwise.
And he has that tiny ponytail. And he looks good in black too.
I know. Like he's really good looking when he wants to be. But he's got a nice voice.
Yeah, when he's the masked bandit, it's so obvious that it's him that it's just hilarious.
You want to slap Buttercup for being such an idiot?
I know.
I kind of feel that way about her for most of the movie, to be honest.
I know. Like every single time I watch this movie, I'm like, I forget what the swamp's called. The fire swamp.
Fire swamp.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Oh God. So in the fire swamp, you know, they're being chased by that monster, and she's just standing there, and like he just dropped his sword, just pick it up, and just kill it, and she just like, just standing there, it makes me angry.
I know. Well, her only personality is her beauty, poor thing.
I guess so.
Yeah. I mean, it's okay, because I feel like she's not the main character, the movie's not about her, she's just sort of like... She's kind of like the MacGuffin, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, events happen because of her,
yeah,
but she's not the actual main attraction here. But, yeah, that's okay. I like everybody else in the movie, so it's all right. And it's got Carol Kane. I love Carol Kane. And
Billy Crystal.
Billy Crystal, yeah. I love that couple.
Yeah. I'm always shocked to hear his voice come out of that person.
Like, you never expect it. Also, I have a question about either of you guys read the book?
Oh, I did, yeah.
I didn't.
No, I love this movie, and I used to watch it all the time when I was a kid, over and over again. This is one, yeah, I could probably quote word for word when I was in, like, fourth grade. But then I read the book, actually, for high school, for my English class. We read it when I was a freshman in high school, and it was so frustrating because of, 'cause the book itself is... multiple frame narratives. It is in story within story within story.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Wuthering Heights or something. And I totally didn't get that so much of it was just William Goldman lying.
Yeah, I thought that was his real life. The first time I read it, I'm like, oh.
I felt like an idiot when I realized that it wasn't true.
Does it set it up as a memoir?
It sets it up as like he was in a bookstore or something after he got divorced and he wanted to like visit his kid, and so he goes to a bookstore and it was a book that his grandfather used to read to him when he was sick or something, but so he's reading this book that's written by like S. Morgenstern and it's called The Princess Bride, but then as he's reading it to his kid or he gives it to his kid for it to like to read by himself, the guy's like, I can't get into it. He tries rereading it himself and is like, oh, my grandfather cut out all the boring bits when he was reading it to me. So, and then you actually have the narrative of the Princess Bride.
But, like, the way he does it is that then he's like, okay, so this is my translation of it. He's
right.
Like, this was written, and he gives a made-up country and says that's where his grandfather was from, like the country of Florin or whatever it is. I forget if that's the country he says it is. And he's like,
yeah.
Oh, so I translated it, but I cut out all the boring parts. So as you read the book, there'll be this section that's, like, written in italics. So he's like, hey, William Goldman here. There were 10 pages where they described the clothing of all the courtiers. I thought that was super boring, so I cut it out. But he'll give, like, a paragraph that sums up what he's cutting out. And
right.
That's the story.
And he does that again with, like...
Like, he's really committed to this idea.
Here are all the trees, and, like,
yeah.
The book was written as a tourist guide for Florin, and...
Yeah, exactly. Like, he goes on about this made-up country, and he gives all these details about it, and I'm reading it, and I'm like, oh,
never heard of this place, but maybe it was like in the Soviet Union or something. He's so committed to maintaining this illusion. And in the beginning of the book, he goes on about writing a screenplay for it. Like, he talks about the movie. I'm trying to remember exactly what he says. And at the very end of the book, there's a chapter from the sequel, quote, called
The Lost
Buttercup's Baby.
Sequel.
The sequel that he never wrote, never intended to write.
Right.
He just pretended there'd be a sequel. Huh. It plays with your mind, man, especially when you're 14. you don't know that kind of thing can happen in a book yet. I was pretty pissed.
Oh, I remember, like, running up to someone who I knew was a fan of the movie and hadn't read the book and going, like, look, Florin was a real place.
See, I warn people. I'm like, this book is really good because it is a great book. But I'm like, FYI, don't believe anything he says and don't be fooled like I was.
Wow.
Like, I don't want to leave Goldman to make anybody else feel like a dupe. So it's my mission to warn everyone. I mean, I imagine if you're older and wiser, you'd pick up on it. I mean, I'm kind of an idiot, so I guess it's no surprise. But yeah, I'm sorry, Sasha. I, in case you hadn't read it, I wasn't sure.
No, I did not know that the book was that much different.
Yeah, it's good, though. It's still a good book.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
just,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
Weird.
When you get to, like, the story of The Princess Bride, like, the story from the movie, you get more details for it, and it's really interesting. Yeah.
Good times. But I think, like, the movie is so good on its own, not regardless of its merits as an adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the perfect film. And I mean, they even say it. He's like, oh, this movie has everything. Everyone can like it because there's something for everybody. And it's true. Like, I remember when I was a kid and I first saw this movie and I never heard of it. And I got it as a gift from a nanny, and the cover made it look way boring because it's a huge headshot of Robin Wright Penn as a princess. And I'm like, what is this? This looks super stupid. But then you put it in, and it's a super awesome adventure, and it's so funny. And I remember just watching it, like, you know, at least once a week for, like, a year. And showing it to, and no one I knew had seen it. I don't know. Now it seems pretty popular, but when I was a kid, I remember introducing it to most of my friends.
Oh.
So, yeah, I don't know if that was like that when you first saw it.
I don't know. I think most people, like, when I was age appropriate to probably watch the movie for the first time, everybody was like into Pokemon and crap like that. No one was watching this movie.
Whoa. Backtrack for a second here. What's crap about Pokemon?
Okay, I'm not saying Pokemon's bad. I'm just saying, in retrospect, I would rather have watched The Princess Bride.
There's no reason we can't have both.
I know.
I had a pretty impressive Pokemon card collection, I'll tell you what, but I also watch The Princess Bride pretty frequently, so. I could organize, so what's great is you could organize your Pokemon card collection while watching The Princess Bride.
Best part. Oh, Alex, you're my hero.
Wow, you have really low standards. Anyway. Princess Bride.
Oh, Sasha, other? Favorite part?
Oh, yeah.
When they're climbing up the cliff face.
Oh, yeah.
And Viggo Montoya's waiting for the masked bandit to come. And then he's like, oh, do you need any help? And they, I love that.
I hate waiting. It was great. I also love that Christopher Guest is in this movie. I always forget that. Because, like, I didn't know who Christopher Guest was when I first saw this.
Is he the six-fingered man?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's, I forget his name. He's like a count or something.
Count, whatever. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, totally. I know. But, yeah. And it's just, it's funny because I watch it now and I'm like, oh, yeah. Because Christopher Guest is someone who I've seen a lot of his movies and I've seen him in movies, but I cannot recognize him when I see him. Like, he looks different every time. So I have a lot of trouble, like, attributing a face to Christopher Guest. I don't know why. Like, I've seen Spinal Tap, and he's one of the stars of Spinal Tap, and I've seen Princess Bride, but I can't figure them out as the same person in my head. It doesn't work. I don't know. But I think it's cool that he's in this movie, because I don't know. It just sort of seems a little bit out of his vein of film, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. Okay, good movie. Any other thoughts?
Not really.
Nope.
It's okay. I think you pretty much summed up why all these movies are great and why everyone should see them.
Yeah. Let's just sign off. So this has been episode 12 of Sumcast.hot, where we discuss frame narrative films. I'm Allison
From
from nerdvampire.wordpress.com.
I'm Alex from filmforager.com.
And I'm Sasha from finalgirlproject.com.
Final thought, vote for us in the Lemmys. Boom.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes I forget that that exists.
Well, I just voted. It took me a long time to vote because I put a lot of thought into it. And I hope everyone else does the same. And the votes end May 9th.
I'll just write Film Forager Nerd Vampire repeatedly.
It's all you need. Yeah. All I really want is I kind of actually do want a nomination for my movie artwork. Because I work really hard on that, and I want someone to tell me I did a good job.
Is there a category for that?
Well, there's best running feature.
Oh, yeah.
And it's
so
a
weekly
feature, so I think it counts.
Yeah. I'll put it all caps, Film Forager.
It's okay. It's fine. I don't actually care that much. I feel like I don't care, but that's the one thing that I do think would be cool. You know what I mean?
Right.
Also, some cats have been nominated, but I feel like I don't know. I think with all the longer running ones going on, I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Likely. Yeah.
We know in our hearts that we're the best.
Obviously, jeez. But yeah, I just feel like there are a lot of like really established podcasts, and those are probably the ones that would get it. That's okay.
Yeah.
I'll probably be Hatter, and then I can punch him in the face for you guys. So I'm leaving to do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I could do that on like a weekly basis.
Thank you.